Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of the Cure Talks Cancer podcast. Each week, we'll be hearing from patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, and healthcare professionals to do what Cure does best: provide cancer updates, research, and education. In this week's episode, we spoke with Dr. Guru Simpavdi about a rare cancer that affects less than 3,000 patients within the United States each year. Simpavdi, who directs the bladder cancer program at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, discusses the current treatment options for patients with penile cancer, as well as the difficulties treating patients with metastatic disease, and why it's so challenging to conduct research in this field.
In the U.S., we see perhaps a couple thousand cases in a year, so it's around 2,000 cases a year. When you look at it, so it's not very common in the U.S., but it is more common in some other parts of the world. For example, in South Asia and in South America, it's more common for a number of reasons. So if you look at it globally, it's probably not going to be more than 100,000 cases a whole year, including the whole world. So that's not a lot of cases for a malignancy.
So kind of looking, you mentioned here in the U.S., you know, what are some factors as to why this is such a rarer cancer?
We don't understand this cancer really well. We know that about half of these cancers are associated with HPV, human papillomavirus. But even those, we don't really understand what the drivers are. And also know that there is an association with smoking and lack of circumcision. So there are some epidemiologic associations like that, but we don't truly understand the drivers, the dominant drivers of disease. And this is why the therapy for this disease is lag behind, in addition to the challenge that it's a rare disease and it's tough to enroll rapidly on trials and make advances.
So kind of like you mentioned, therapies or treatment options. So when we talk about that, what does the current landscape look like when it comes to treating, you know, patients with penile cancer? And then, like you mentioned, what are some of the challenges in that arena?
It's the biology of the disease is challenging in itself. It's not only local regionally aggressive in the local area of origin in the penis and the surrounding area and the lymph glands. It can also metastasize to distant organs. So it's got both of those patterns of behavior. It tends to be more local regional in the beginning, but it can rapidly metastasize and become a distant metastatic disease. In terms of how we treat this disease, if you catch it early enough, and a lot of men tend to ignore a lesion on the penis. It's just a lot of stigma attached to it, and it's just ignored quite a bit by men. And in fact, men who are not circumcised, it's even tougher to sometimes detect it early enough. But given that challenge, so you can still detect it early because it arises in an organ that's externally visible. You can see lesions, unlike a kidney mass where it's all internal and you can't really find a mass till it's really huge and symptomatic. So at that point, local resection, local forms of therapy, topical therapies, most microscopic surgery, local resections can be done, which might be followed by an inguinal lymph node dissection when there is a suspicion of lymph node involvement in the inguinal areas. And staging has to be done to look for distant disease or inguinal and pelvic lymph node disease. And generally, if it's more than just localized, locally advanced, like spread to inguinal lymph nodes and or pelvic lymph nodes, then we end up doing neoadjuvant or preoperative chemotherapy with an aggressive combination chemotherapy regimen, which has been used for a while now, more than a decade, the TIP regimen, Taxol, iphosphamide, cisplatin. And usually about four cycles of that is given. The response rates are high, but it's you can achieve complete remission sometimes, but it tends to be more often than not a partial response and a good partial response. And that is followed by a surgical resection, which might involve a partial or a full penectomy and an inguinal lymph node dissection. and followed sometimes by a pelvic lymph node dissection based on the extent of inguinal lymph node involvement. You may want to look at the pelvic lymph nodes. So that's a local or loco-regional disease. It's metastatic disease, and that's a different challenge. This is not going to be curable anymore because in local or loco-regional disease, we're still doing the neoadjuvant chemo followed by surgical approach in a curative fashion for the curative intent. But with distant metastasis, it's no longer curable, unfortunately. We have given cisplatin-based chemotherapy. Cisplatin plus 5-fluorouracil is commonly given. The same TIP regimen I mentioned in the neoadjuvant setting, that could also be applied to the metastatic disease setting. So it's reasonable to apply in the metastatic disease setting. So that's first-line chemotherapy. But the salvage therapy is where we are really lacking. We don't really have much that works. Taxanes have been used. Methotrexate has been used. Checkpoint inhibitors, as you know, the immunotherapy drugs that are on the scene now, they have been looked at in penile cancer. There's not a lot of data. There are some small reports. And ipilimumab plus nivolumab, the combined checkpoint inhibitor approach, has also been looked at, in fact, by our institution here, the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. There were not a lot of patients. With the caveat of that, small number of patients, the response rate was not high. So it did not quite look like what we are used to seeing in other cancers where we see 20, 30, even higher chances of response rate, especially with ipilimumab, nivolumab. The response rate, for example, in melanoma is close to 50%, RCC around 40 to 50%. We did not see that. So it's still challenging to treat, and immunotherapy, although is a good direction to go, so far has not had a lot of success.
Okay. And one of the things you mentioned was, you know, identifying it early, and you know, it's an external organ. So in theory, you should be able to know or at least see that something's wrong. What's some advice that you would offer potential patients that, you know, if you see something, don't just brush it off. This could be something that's troublesome.
Yes. So there needs to be some patient advocacy and education that needs to get out there. If men see a lesion that's hanging around, growing, itching or bleeding, just something that wasn't there and does not quickly go away. You can, of course, have infectious, benign lesions in that area, but any change that tends to hang around or get worse with time, grow, especially with bleeding or itching or erythema or growth inside, the patient should seek attention.
And another thing you also mentioned is aggressive. You talked about aggressive. What does that mean exactly? Does it mean that it's a fast moving cancer and it could, you know, survival could be short, or is it aggressive in that it could spread very quickly?
Both. It can spread very quickly. It tends to be loco-regional in the beginning. It is not, it tends not to have an initial distant metastasis pattern of spread. It tends to first go to the inguinal lymph nodes, maybe pelvic lymph nodes, and then spread. But this successive spread to inguinal lymph nodes and pelvic lymph nodes and then distant can occur quickly, even within a time span of a year, but it can occur slower than that. So there's every patient is different, so you learn from every patient there. But I have also seen, of course, patients where there is spread to the lymph nodes, patient received appropriate neoadjuvant aggressive chemotherapy, followed by aggressive surgical approach and has been cured. So you see a whole spectrum of behavior.
So kind of with that being said, you talk about it depends on the patient, but in general, if you say have a patient diagnosed with penile cancer, what do you typically tell them is the current outlook depending on how they've been diagnosed?
The current outlook is that if you were diagnosed at an early stage, a small lesion confined to the penis, no spread to the inguinal lymph nodes, with aggressive local procedures, which might sometimes you can do penile sparing, Mohs microscopic surgery, that's possible sometimes, but not always. sometimes you need a partial splenectomy. So at that early confined stage of disease, most of the disease is curable. Once you are seeing spread to inguinal lymph nodes, your cure rate would drop quite a bit down to the 50% or even lower range. It depends in which what study you look at. Once you see spread to the pelvic lymph nodes, that's a much more challenging and aggressive disease, and the chance of distant metastasis down the road is very high. I would say it's more than 70-80%.
Dr. Sampavde discusses the difficulty in treating metastatic penile cancer and why most patients in this population don't do well.
The response rate with first-line cisplatin-based chemotherapy for metastatic disease is approximately 25-30%, which means around 30% of patients have what's called a RECIST response by conventional criteria, which is a 30% decline in the sum of maximum dimension of lesions. So that occurs in around 30% of patients. We don't usually see complete responses. And so curing metastatic disease with this is unfortunately not realistic at this point. So given that the response rate is only 30%, the other 70% by definition don't do that well. So they either have progressive disease or stable disease for a few months and then progress. And so the median survival, if you look at all patients who receive cisplatin-based combination chemotherapy, cisplatin 5-FU for metastatic disease, the median survival is less than a year. It's around 8 to 10 months. So that's how aggressive this is.
Is this pretty much because it's metastasized and it's spread? Is that why these numbers are so low?
Yes, it's metastasized. It's a resistant cancer. It's not highly chemosensitive. And so far, from what we see, it's also not very sensitive to T-cell checkpoint inhibitors, immunotherapy drugs. It's a challenging resistant disease, and that's why we see these poor outcomes.
Dr. Sampavde notes that research in penile cancer is severely lacking and highlights what is being done to try and conduct more research in the field.
Research in penile cancer is severely, severely lacking. We don't understand the tumor biology. There's not a lot of people doing basic research or translational research in penile cancer. And in terms of clinical trials, when you look at clinicaltrials.gov and look for penile cancer trials, you don't see much. It's really a dozen trials, perhaps spread all over the globe. There is one somewhat meritorious effort that I want to raise, and this is called the IMPACT trial, INPACT. This is the International Penile Advanced Cancer Trial. So this is actually a global effort. There is a U.S. cooperative group system as well as the Canadian cooperative group system along with the NCI doing this trial. So this is actually a phase 3 trial that is looking at patients with locally advanced disease and looking at 3 arms. One arm gets the standard surgery with the lymph node dissection, and the second arm gets neoadjuvant chemotherapy followed by the standard surgery. And there's a third arm that gets neoadjuvant chemoradiotherapy followed by the surgery with lymph node dissection. So it's going to be targeting 400 patients. And this is the only phase 3 trial in penile cancer I'm aware of. And this is the first time we're seeing anything like this. It's ongoing. It's accruing slowly, but accruing. So we'll hope for the best. So far, we've not had a randomized trial in this space. We've only had small phase 2 trials, 25, 30, 35 patients. It's a big trial for penile cancer. That's how it is. There really have not been randomized trials.
Now, speaking of, you said the trials and the fact that, you can maybe count on 2-3 hands, so to speak, of how many have been going on. And you said this is the largest that you are aware of, phase 3. Is it mostly because, like you said, it's a rare disease, so not many people find that it's perhaps worth studying, or is it anything else?
I think it's a lot of things. So these patients are not very common in the Western world. You see them in South Asia or South America. it's tough to open a trial logistically, open a trial globally for a rare cancer, because what it means is you really have to open it in a lot of sites, a lot of institutions to capture all these patients. So that obviously raises the issue of cost. Can you really open a trial in 1,000 institutions? And also you have to look at would industry be that interested in developing a drug for such a rare orphan disease? Certainly that's not a disease that we would target as the first target for a drug, unless you understood the tumor biology and you really have a key target, a molecule that could be driving the disease. That could excite industry into developing a specific drug for penile cancer before it's been developed for other cancers. So I think that if there is biology behind it, that could still convince industry to pursue drug development in penile cancer. At the moment, we don't understand biology. It's a rare cancer. To put patients on even a small trial, a 30 to 40 patient trial, it takes a huge effort with a lot of institutions to put a small number of patients. So that's why it is not highly attractive to industry or anybody, honestly, at the moment.
Dr. Sampavdi talks about some of the challenges he's faced in trying to conduct research in penile cancer and offers some insight into ways to possibly develop new therapies.
It's been challenging. I'll give you a couple examples. We opened a couple of trials looking at new drugs in this disease. One was a trial of afatinib. It's a pan-HER, EGFR, HER2 family inhibitor, oral tyrosine kinase inhibitor. It's approved in lung cancer. So we tried to look at it in penile cancer because the HER2 family, EGFR, HER2, HER3, is frequently amplified in penile cancer. And so we tried to look at it. We opened the trial in 5 institutions, but we had a huge challenges in accruing patients. We got the word out on education websites, clinicaltrials.gov. We spread the word on Twitter. We did a lot of things, but these patients are scattered all over, like I said, and it's tough to get patients sometimes to travel to a handful of sites scattered over the country. We did have to spread out over the country so that it's close to people. One of the things to also appreciate is these patients, when they have advanced metastatic disease, may have really poor performance status. Frequently, a lot of these patients have lower socioeconomic status. It's very hard for these patients to travel to a academic center 300 miles away. So we probably did not appreciate that as much. And the number of institutions we had it open in, we had about a handful, maybe not enough for a 30-patient trial. Maybe you need 20 or 30 institutions. But to open a small trial in 30 institutions does take a lot of effort and a lot more resources than were available to us. And we had a second trial that was looking at pembrolizumab, a PD-1 inhibitor, an exciting drug, immunotherapy, right? But even that had trouble accruing, and both of these trials had to close early because of very slow accrual, unfortunately.
Is there any ways that, this can be combated, or is it kind of just you go with the flow, so to speak? You kind of just learn and try and make changes over time.
I think one of the ways to develop penile cancer therapy is, one is a big international effort, like the IMPACT trial I just mentioned earlier, the neoadjuvant setting. Now, that is very challenging to do in, on a wide scale as a paradigm. The other way of doing it would be basket trials, where patients with multiple cancers, different cancers, are being enrolled based on a biomarker. For example, pembrolizumab could be on label for penile cancer in patients with a high tumor mutation burden, because pembrolizumab is now approved in patients following prior therapy if they have a high tumor mutation burden. That just happened about a month ago. So if you have a high TMB, tumor mutation burden, pembrolizumab would be on label for penile cancer. I would encourage genomic profiling just to look for that. There, of course, also is approval of pembrolizumab for MSI high tumors with mismatch repair deficiency. So again, if we have a penile cancer with metastatic penile cancer progressing post-chemo, I think you should have this genomic information available so you could justify pembrolizumab based on these molecular criteria.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cure Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.